Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a fun one. I got with me today Lisa Duke with Lisa Duke Financial Coach. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Sure. Well, Lisa, can you tell us a little bit about what you do? What's a financial coach do?
Well, primarily I work with folks that are interested in improving their money habits, their money stories, to really
help
them.
Their money stories?
Yes.
What's a money story?
So it's some of these cliches and hidden beliefs that we have in our minds and in our lives that we may not be aware of, but that drive our behavior and our choices and can lead us down a different path to a different result than what we think we want.
And does this start like in childhood?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The things that you observe as a kid, maybe how your parents handle money, the things that you're taught. We generally don't get any financial education in the school system, even at a college level.
Is that good?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'd really like to see more financial education as a part of initial school at maybe the high school level and on into college for those that attend college as well. I think it's really important to have a knowledge foundation that people can build on, because a lot of people, if you don't get it at school and you don't get it at home, then we go into adult life really unprepared to handle our own finances and our own money. And that's where we see people making mistakes and getting to places that they don't want to be with their finances. Things get out of control really quickly.
Now, when you talk about kind of educating someone about their finances, like how granular do you get? Like, do you think people have to know like how the stock market works? Do they have to know just their checking account, how to balance a checking account? Is that important or not? Should they be investing in the future? Like to understand compounding, like certain kind of, like where's the line of knowledge you think that an average person needs to have?
I really try to meet clients where they are. So for a lot of my clients, it's really the basics around budgeting and making sure that within their budget they have money set aside for saving and then eventually investing towards retirement and towards building wealth. So for a lot of folks, it's very, very basic and just getting those good habits established. But for some of my clients, they're pretty good savers. They have building
towards
retirement.
What's a good saver look like?
This is controversial, right? As much as possible is the right amount to save.
As much as possible.
Absolutely. Most people will say at least 15% you need to be saving for retirement. And then you should also have an emergency fund of 3 to 6 months of expenses. So in the case of a layoff, or maybe you work for the federal government and they decide not to pay you for a few weeks, if you have that emergency fund, you're in a much better place and a much stronger position to be able to weather those bumps in the road.
Now, what about the person that says, look, I barely make it week to week. You want me to save 15% here, 6 months here? I mean, I'm worried about paying rent.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's very valid. And for different people, there's certainly different strategies. If it really is an earning problem, then the right solution might be getting some additional education, moving into a different career field. And that's really more the work of a career coach. If they're earning good money, most of my clients, either as individuals or as a couple, are earning around $100,000. It should be enough to survive and still be able to save,
but I got a boat and two cars, and then my wife likes fancy clothes.
Exactly. And I'm sympathetic. I'm a spender at heart, so I get it. And my role is not to judge, but definitely to help people look at some of those assumptions. We tend to spend what we think we need and then look for the leftovers to save, whereas I really think you have to save first and then spend what's left over, which is very backwards of the way we usually think about it in America. But I think we have to question some of the assumptions we make about the right way to live. And I'm a big fan of always trying to think about what's right for you and to question some of those assumptions rather than just to accept, well, this is the way everybody does it. This is what's normal. So really looking for unusual solutions, especially around the big three expenses, which are transportation, housing, and food, looking to challenge some of the assumptions there and see if we can carve out money in my clients' budgets to help them save.
Now, have you been able to have any examples where you have made an impact, where maybe somebody had a lifestyle that was more materialistic and more, you know, always buying the latest car or whatever, always have, where you've been able to, you know, kind of make a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably using myself as the best example, because I'm not violating anybody's confidentiality. We used to live on the fashionable side of town in a big house. It wasn't over the top big. It was not a McMansion, but a substantial house. There's just myself and my husband and the dogs. We don't have any kids. We did not really need 4 bedrooms, 3.5 baths. It just seemed like the thing to do at the time. So we went through about 2-3 years ago and really reevaluated some of the choices that we'd made without thinking it through. And so at that point, we moved closer to his work. We downsized the house. We still have a plenty big enough house. It's 3-bedroom, 2-bath. It's plenty of space for the two of us. But by reducing his commute and downsizing the house and moving to what, frankly, is the unfashionable side of Atlanta, we were able to save almost half of what we were spending on our mortgage. Made a big difference.
Now, do you remember the thought process when you bought that house in the fashionable side? Like, what was the thinking behind, oh, well, of course we're going to move here. This is where all our friends are.
Yeah,
this is where,
absolutely. Like, it was where all of our friends are. It was where work
all the
was.
Cool stuff we like.
Yeah, all the fun stuff to do. Of course, it's all that fun stuff that tends to siphon your money away, unfortunately. But we still run, to this day, an IT consulting business. Mm-hmm. And the idea was, if we can get on that northern arc of Atlanta, that's where most of the jobs are, that's where most of the clients are. And so we'll be able to get closer to our clients. We'll be able to get to their location more easily. Over time, we found, gosh, most of our clients were working remote and were doing virtual work. So it really doesn't matter
where
the client
is. So it was a false assumption to begin with?
Exactly, exactly. And we were in originally a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. And we thought, gosh, if we had one more bedroom, we would have a place for guests to stay when they came over, because it was sort of our bedroom, my office, and his office. And so we didn't quite understand. When you say, I want a 4-bedroom house, I guess that tends to not you up into a different square footage. And I'm not, believe it or not, being a financial coach, I'm not a numbers person. I'm not mathematically inclined. So it didn't quite click with me, the difference in square footage. So we found within this house, he had a office in the basement. I took over what was supposed to be sort of a formal parlor, like a sitting room, and use that for my office. So then we had 4 empty bedrooms. Well, we used one, but we had 3 empty bedrooms upstairs, and it just made no sense. And the biggest thing to me was heating it in the summer, in the winter, and cooling it in the summer. Air conditioning in Atlanta, it gets expensive really fast. So I'm cooling all this space that no one ever
is in.
goes in. Yeah, yeah. But again, we...
How long did you just accept that as this is the way it is?
Oh, gosh. We were there for, I think, about 10 years.
Wow. So just imagine that savings.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Cutting that mortgage almost in half. It
for
made
10 years?
Huge. Oh, gosh. Yes. If we
you
could
don't even want to think about it, right?
No.
And that's where you help with your clients as you move forward from this point forward, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, and forgive yourself. Is that part of it?
Exactly. Because a lot of people have a lot of guilt and shame around money, which is understandable and common, but also kind of silly. If you're not good at playing basketball because you never took a class on how to play basketball and you never were taught by your parents how to play basketball and you never played basketball with your friends, and then you try it the first time and you're terrible at it, it's understandable, right?
That kind of makes sense.
How would you be good at it? So it's the same thing. We don't learn it in school. Some people learn from their parents. Some people do not. And we tend, because money is the last taboo in the world. I know more about some of my friends' sex lives than I do about their financial lives. And so being able to start breaking some of the taboos, breaking some of the guilt and shame, and just talking about money, people then become, it sort of dissolves some of the power that it has. And it just becomes another area of your life. It takes some of the emotion out of it. And I find clients are able to deal with it more rationally just from the process of kind of talking through what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Now, you mentioned that a lot of your clients have an income, six-figure income. Mm-hmm. Are a lot of your clients business owners like you guys are?
I do work with a lot of entrepreneurs because I can understand the background, and I feel like with those clients, I can bring more to it. I always start with personal finance because I find the mistakes that we make in personal finance carry over into how we run our business finances. If you overspend with your personal budget and then you start a business thinking, oh, I'll make more money and then I will suddenly have enough. If you overspend, you will never have enough. You have to first define what enough is, earn up to or beyond that level. But if you're just waiting to get to a point where you have everything you've ever imagined you could ever want, there's always better stuff to want, right?
Like, we're good at doing, creating new stuff.
We have a personal friend who, he and a business partner owned a business and they sold it to one of the big name accounting firms. And he said, you know, I just can't imagine what I would do with all this money. I have everything I want. And I kind of chuckled. I said, oh, you're going to have all the same stuff, but it's going to be brands you don't even know exist now.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what's happened is he's, you know, like, you find the better scotch and the better shoes.
Right.
And the
how did I tolerate this other scotch?
Exactly. Yes. How did I rough it with this terrible other scotch before I knew about the fancy scotch that even didn't even know it existed. But yeah, you find a way to spend the money. So you have to kind of take a stand and say, this is my lifestyle. We're going to hold the line right here. And then we will manage the personal finances and the business finances accordingly. And certainly, hopefully, if you get to a point where you have enough, a little bit of lifestyle creep is not a bad thing. That can be a lot of fun. But it needs to be something that is a reward that you give yourself after you have saved and after you've taken care of any debt from the past. It can't be something that you front load into your life and say, oh, well, I'll just get the loans. Because that, it doesn't just, it's not even so much the interest, although that's part of it, but it eats up all of your cash flow. If you have a mortgage and you have a car payment and you have credit card debt, you get your paycheck and then it's all promised to other people. You don't get to keep any of it for yourself.
So is that the first kind of hurdle you recommend clients do, is kind of battle through the debt?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Dave Ramsey is, of course, a great resource. He's really
well known. You like his philosophy of going for the smallest debt first and work your way up to the largest?
Generally, because I find that generally works with people's psychology. Some people
By interest rate, but more by kind
of... Yeah, it's the difference between what they call the debt snowball, which is starting with the smallest debt and snowballing it up, and then the debt avalanche, which is where you look more at the interest rate. Financially, paying off the highest rate debt first actually makes more sense, but people tend to get discouraged if that first one is really huge. So the snowball kind of takes the psychology into it, the idea of we're going to have some little wins and we're going to build from there rather than starting with this huge thing and getting discouraged. So if my clients are really mathematically minded, they come to me with a bunch of spreadsheets, they want to go in that direction, then mathematically that's the right way to go. It makes sense. But most folks, they're just so overwhelmed that they really need to start with that smallest step first, start.
How many debt little chunks do they have typically when they come to you?
Ooh, usually a mortgage, not always. Usually a mortgage, usually one or more car payments. And then there's usually a good amount of credit card debt. And the cycle that I see people get into, and it all sounds logical as you're doing it, because I've done it. This is how this is why I say I'm sympathetic. Mm-hmm. So you run up your credit card debt, and then you sort of wake up to the fact that, ooh, I have all this debt, and it's at a really high rate. So you refinance it into a personal loan or maybe a HELOC, a home equity line of credit.
Or there's always a credit card that's giving you like a year.
0% interest.
Right. And all of a sudden you got five credit cards going.
Exactly. Exactly. And it becomes too much for you to keep track of mentally. That's another. Some people are really into trying to roll credit cards and get airline points. And, you know, if that works for somebody, the travel hacking, good for them. But if somebody carries a balance, then they don't need to be trying to play those games. They really just need to have one, maybe two cards so that they can mentally keep track of, oh, okay, I spent $500 over there, so it's gone from my checking account. Because I see a lot of people that spend that same $500 on multiple different accounts.
Now, you offer a package right now?
Yes, absolutely. It's $350, and what that includes is an initial discovery session.
It's an intervention?
It's the come to Jesus package.
Right.
So, yes. So, we do an initial discovery where we sit down and work with them and help them really kind of understand, okay, with all the things that you have going on in your financial world, where do you want to focus right now? What is your goal for the next 30 days? And then they map out, we map out together, a plan for the next 90 days to really get them on track with that goal. So the initial discovery session and then support via email and text over the 90 days. We also do two additional 30-minute calls. One is a checkpoint, kind of halfway through. Okay, this is what you said your goal was. These are the action steps you were going to take. We've had a couple of back and forth over email or text. Where are you now? Are you on track? Do we need to adjust? And then at the end of the 90-day period, we do a wrap-up call of, you know, what went better than expected, where were your challenges, and really help them figure out from that point in time, where do we go from here?
Now, your work is not kind of telling them, buy this stock, sell here, get into cryptocurrency. You're not, that's not your business, right? You're more helping them behaviorally behave in a manner that's going to get them the outcome they desire.
Right. My goal is to help move them to a place where they're saving and they're building wealth.
So you're trying to work on habits.
Exactly. And as a matter of fact, I'm not even allowed legally to sell investments. I don't have the licensing to sell insurance, to sell investments. So my goal is really to get them ready and then hand them off to a financial planner or a financial advisor who would help them manage the big pile of money and invest it better once they have it. Mm-hmm. But my work is really around helping them create the big pile of money in the first place, which I think is the challenge. Unless you're a natural saver, there are a few of those out there, but
what percent do you think are natural savers?
Oh,
that people that just like naturally live below their means.
It's got to be very small, especially
like
in our
under
culture
10?
Today. Yeah, I would say under 10%, maybe 2-3%.
Really?
I don't know, because again, we don't talk about our money. We're
wow.
very taboo.
That's shocking.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like our parents' generation, they seem to be better at saving, I would think.
I think so. And I think some of it comes from the people that I find that tend, not everybody, but tend to be the natural savers, will tell a story about my dad was an immigrant from Cuba and they never really had a lot and they scrimped and they saved. And they said education was really important. So I went to school and I became an engineer and I was making a ton of money, but I just kept living the way I had been living. And then I woke up one day in my 40s and I had this giant pile of money. I'm like, wow, nice problem to have. But I think that's the exception. I think we are so marketed to, and you observe.
We're kind of weak.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
we're influenced
yeah.
easily by shiny objects.
You know, we're children of the summer, right? Like my Game of Thrones reference in there, right? We've had everything come. You know, certainly people have had struggles, but for the most part, compared to a third world country where you've got people starving to death,
right.
If you grow up in this country, you're incredibly, even the poor in this country are privileged and blessed compared to people that don't have
enough to
eat.
Poor in other countries, yeah.
Exactly. And
they don't want to go head-to-head with what real poverty
right,
looks like.
Right, right. Now, I'm not minimizing that experience.
No,
it has its own challenges, but
when our poor have, you know, clothes and shoes and cell phones.
Right,
and
right.
There's
it's
some
still
poor
a struggle
that are,
and there are still challenges,
water,
but
right.
we're still fortunate compared to the rest of the world. So, and also saving and investing are completely invisible. If your Facebook profile had your net worth out to your side and you couldn't post pictures
of
your
vacation. Followers and likes.
Yeah, yeah. It had your net worth and you can't post pictures of your kids on vacation. You can't post pictures of your house. You can't post pictures of your car. I think people would get a lot more aware of their net worth.
Well, I think the problem is they see other people going on vacation and seeing all this stuff and they're like, well, how come I don't have that?
Exactly.
And then they start.
Yeah, we compare our everyday life to other people's highlight reel.
Right.
And don't realize what that gap is there. Those people don't live like that every day either. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell from the pictures if that was something that they saved for and paid cash for, or if it was the last little gap on their credit card and now they're completely maxed out and that
right.
vacation is going to be what pushes them into bankruptcy. You can't tell by looking
right.
at the pictures.
Now, for you, what's the most rewarding part of the job? Because you have your regular job is you still have this IT firm, right?
Right,
so
right.
This is just like a passion project for you?
Absolutely. And building it towards being more and more of a self-sustainable business. But I really started it, honestly, out of a little bit of a state of panic. You read the articles about what's going on with our generation. I don't think we're financially aware of what is coming in terms of retirement.
Winter is coming, right?
Yes, exactly. You can tell we've been doing the Game of Thrones marathon at our house. So, yeah, absolutely. Retirement is coming. And the bad news is it's not like when you turn 65, you magically get enough money to sustain your lifestyle. You will get 65 or 67, whatever it is for the age group that you're in. At some point, I believe we will get Social Security, but that is not the amount that will cover the spending that most of my clients are accustomed to. There's going to be a gap there between how they spend today and what Social Security will provide from them, and it's their responsibility to save that up. And it seems so far off. Again, when you've got bills today and you've got dreams today, how do you think about that long term? But if we don't, we're going to be in a real bind. And if you read articles, you're starting to see the first of that now with some of the baby boomers that did not have a pension, that did not were not able to save. And so there's a little bit of a panic there for me, you know, kind of worrying about my peers about, hey, are you aware of this? Are you working on it? So that's the kind of scary bad news side. The good news, the positive side of that is there's a whole movement around financial independence. So the bad news is you don't get to 65 and magically get to retire. The good news is you don't have to wait until you're 65 to retire. So there's a lot of those folks. You talked earlier about what's the right amount to save. Some of those folks are saving half their household income and within 10, 12 years are building enough of a nest egg that they can live forever on their investments. So it's the FIRE movement, financial independence, right? Retire early. So I have a real passion about, you know, and again, saving half your money sounds really unrealistic when you spend more than you make. But to have that as a placeholder in your mind, that is possible.
And it's a mindset.
Exactly, exactly. To start kind of thinking about that and working towards that as you manage your own finances, I think that can help, you know, make that retirement conversation a little bit more real.
Right. And it's something that has to be addressed because people are living longer. I mean, there was a time where people barely lived into their 70s and 80s, and now people regularly are living in their 90s, and by the time we're that age, it'll probably be hundreds.
Yep.
So the money's got to last.
Yeah, my dad's in his 80s now, and he was kind of chuckling the other day. He said, I just realized my company has actually paid me for more years as a retiree than they ever paid me as an employee. It's
right.
Like, well, good for you, Dad.
That's not sustainable, though.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen for the rest of us.
Right. That math is not going to be able to be forever.
Exactly.
Now, when a person takes part in that coaching package, is it just a one-shot thing, or is there kind of a regular rhythm beyond this package that your clients contract with you?
So my goal is to try to, within that 90 days, get them focused,
to
get
fix
them on track.
Them. You're going to fix Bill.
Not totally fix them, but get them on the right track.
Is it usually an individual, or are you taking the family approach?
Typically an individual, especially because I'm dealing so much with money stories. And there's typically one person in the house that handles the household budget. So I usually start with them, sometimes in a couple.
Even if they're not the breadwinner?
Right. It's really who manages the spending that I find has more effect on what position they're in than just who's earning the money. Mm-hmm. So I typically work with one person. Sometimes the other person will come in and do the program on their own as well. But I'm usually working with one person, sort of their habits, their spending, their beliefs, and helping them get on track.
Good stuff. So if somebody wanted to learn more about that package, or they wanted to just start talking to you, what's the best way to find you?
My website is lisaduke.net, mm-hmm. and the email address is lisa@lisaduke.net. And that's spelled the simplest way possible, lisa@lisaduke.net.
Good stuff. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.